Stay tuned for The Turning Point with Mike Fader. So the other night, maybe you could turn this one up a little bit. I guess the music's higher than the voice. Can you turn it up a little bit? Yeah, that's that's better right there. Thanks. That's perfect. Thank you. So the other night, I saw a documentary that Netflix produced on Nina Simone. It's hard to look at, but it's fascinating. Absolutely, almost like sometimes morbidly fascinating. This woman was a genius, an absolute musical genius. And her playing, her singing, everything about her was just pure musical genius. But she paid so heavy. She paid an incredible price for almost all of her life. Some of it was just the way her, you know, you don't know about her early childhood, but later on she just went through hell for most of her life. And it's an extraordinary documentary. It's got its lapses, it's got its low points, but it's really an amazing thing. So we're doing this from the studio, live from the studio for the second time, and the studio is still under construction. So we, you know, have certain obstacles we have to deal with here. But everybody who wrote in, thank you for letting me know they were happy to hear it back live, especially the sound of, I mean, it's been live, but especially the sound of the broadcast. Because now I'm in the studio, it's got a, it looks like an absolutely brand new mic. Is this a brand new mic? I don't know. I can't tell. But it's a, you know, high professional microphone. So looks good. So this whole thing, have you been reading, obviously you've been reading about this, but the whole thing about the Confederate battle flag, sometimes I guess the two things are confused. That there's a difference between the Confederate flag, Confederate States of America flag and the Confederate battle flag. I don't really know what the difference is, but the Confederate battle flag had been for a long time flying over right next to the state capital in Columbia, South Carolina. And when these killings, these murders took place in a black church, now, what is it, a week to 10 days ago, I forget exactly when, the whole country was incensed. And what it did, it was it just sort of gave the final shove, probably, hopefully, to this whole idea of the symbol of this flag flying over the capital of a state where actually where the Civil War began, Charleston. And Charleston Harbor was where the first shot was fired by the South into a fort, a Union fort, actually, a, you know, a federal government fort that Charleston was previously part of before South Carolina seceded from the Union. And that was the actual beginning of hostilities. But this Confederate flag, it's not just a flag, too, of course. It's mugs, license plates, God knows how many other things, whole symbols of decals, T-shirts. You know, I mean, they're it's a huge, huge business, not just down south, but in some other places, too. And some people buy these things because these are the rebels, you know, the rebels of society, the outlaws, right? Sometimes you see these things on the helmets of bikers, the same way you would see a swastika, right? It says, you know, like basically it's an up yours. I would use another word, but basically it's an up yours to the whole, you know, society. And so this symbol, there was an article in the Times today, in the front page of the Times, where in South Carolina, which is basically where it all started, the Confederacy, although, you know, Richmond, Virginia was the capital of Confederate States of America. In South Carolina, where this flag has been flying, I don't think it's right on top of the state capitol building, but right near it or on the grounds of where the state capitol is. and in fact, actually, you had this bizarre situation when the nine people were murdered in that church. It was such an incredible tragedy, is such an incredible tragedy, and symbolizes so much of the tragic history of whites and blacks, and especially blacks in this country, from slavery all the way up until right now to this kind of shooting and to the you know, all kinds of other things. When this happened, the state flag of South Carolina was lowered to half-mast in mourning. However, because of some strange, archaic law that exists in South Carolina, the Confederate flag is not allowed to be lowered to half-staff for any reason. Not allowed to be lowered to half-staff for any reason, which I guess would be, I supposedly it was passed, who knows when this ridiculous law was passed, but that would be a sign of surrender. Well, they lost, but they haven't given up. They don't. There's a lot of people. And this is old stuff now. This is old stuff. This is 150 years since the end of the Civil War, when the South, when the Confederacy lost to the Union forces. But they still haven't given up. And so a law was passed, I don't remember when it was, decades ago or even longer, that under no circumstances could this flag be lowered for any reason. It might indicate surrender. So you had this shameful, absurd situation where, the governor of South Carolina, I don't know who's in charge of saying lower that flag. It's probably the governor, Nikki Haley. Who said lower that flag. So the flag is lower of South Carolina is lowered a half staff in mourning for the tragic, hateful, bigoted, racist murder of these people by this lunatic, Dylan Roof, I think his name is. And he, on his website or whatever, he had a website, I don't know, on his blog or Facebook page or website, he had it himself inevitably he was from the South, posing with symbols of the Confederacy. The flag, this flag is a symbol. This flag is a symbol. Flags are symbols, and symbols are powerful. Symbols are powerful. Think of the swastika. Think of the cross. Think of the cross. Think of the Jewish star, and think of the swastika. The Jewish star during the Nazi era in Europe from the early 30s till when it was all over in 1945, or at least the hostilities were over. The Nazis, you know, lingered for a long time. There's still a couple of old ones, you know, scooting around like rats in sewers. And there is neo-Nazism throughout Europe. But they made the Jews in ghettos and Jews in other places wear big yellow stars, Jewish stars, big yellow stars on their on the front of their jackets or shirts when they were walking around. So, I mean, these things are symbolic. Symbols are powerful. And the swastika, of course, being one of the most powerful evil symbols of all time. The cross, you know, a mixed symbol. The cross symbolizes different things to different people. It is hateful in the world to a whole lot of people. It was a symbol that was carried to the quote-unquote New World from Europe, and right along with the flags of various national flags of various countries, it was carried to the New World. And whatever happened was done often with the blessing of the church, with the Catholic Church and with other churches, but especially with the Catholic Church in Central and South America. So the cross was a hateful symbol to the people there who were murdered. It's almost like genocide and enslaved. So these things, obviously, bottom line, flags are this flag, this Confederate flag, just like the Nazi flag, like the the swastika, the German battle flag, was and is. These things are extremely powerful. And what does the Confederate battle flag symbolize to, I suppose, to a lot of Southerners, to hundreds of thousands of Southerners who are willing to say it out loud? Or maybe to more of them, I don't really know. But I'm only figuring it's hundreds of thousands. But it could be, I don't know, it could be a couple of million Southerners. It symbolizes, preserving individual freedoms. It symbolizes rebelling against a tyrannical national government. It symbolizes states' rights, the right of each state not to be engulfed, not to be swallowed up, and thus the right of the individual not to be swallowed up by some powerful tyrant, some concentrated executive power or national government power in another place. And in this case, Washington was something like a southern city. Washington, as close as it could be to being a southern city without actually being in the South, Washington, D.C., So what does the Confederate flag symbolize? What were these people fighting for? They were fighting, they would tell you, for states' rights, for the right not to be oppressed, the right not to have a centralized government impose tyranny over them. But also to be clear about it, the Confederate flag also symbolized slavery, human slavery, perhaps. One of the worst things, and there's some pretty awful things practiced by human beings and other human beings, symbolizes slavery, one of the worst things ever practiced by human beings against other human beings. And everything that slavery meant and everything that it resulted in and the way people were treated in slavery. Slavery, families bought and sold in the tens of millions, black slaves by other black chieftains in Africa and by Arabs who sold these slaves to European slavers. And then there was the Middle Passage where men, women, children were crammed in spaces that weren't big enough for them, all together underneath decks with no thought whatsoever, treated worse than animals were treated, literally worse than animals. And many of them died and were thrown overboard. It's, I don't know, these estimates, I don't know what they count for, but something like 10, 15 million, close maybe to 20 million in the time when there was slavery from Africa, the slave trade from Africa to the Caribbean and to the colonies, and then later to the United States of America before the British tried to put a stop to slavery and slave buying and selling, and the ships of slaves, slave ships, in I think it was 1804. Tens of millions of people crammed beneath decks, dying, not being fed enough, just treated worse than the livestock were on ships, and just then thrown overboard for the sharks. So this is what the Confederate flag also symbolizes. It certainly symbolizes that to blacks, and it symbolizes that to a lot of other people, too, who have merely studied history, who understand that it was a complicated war, and there are complicated reasons for this, for the Civil War. And I'm not going to get into all of that, first of all, because I don't have the deepest education, and I did read a lot of stuff about it once upon a time, but I don't think I've retained it all. But still, there was a lot of stuff going on that caused the Civil War, and that the Civil War was about, that it wasn't slavery. But still, to this day, the main thing that people remember, and because it's got a DNA chain of history, well, by which I mean, first of all, it symbolized slavery, and then lynching, and then segregation, and then poll taxes, and then massive poverty. And these things come up until the current time. Poverty, a tremendous amount, or an absurd rate of black men and black people in prisons. Voting rights suppression. The rights of voters are suppressed. The rights of black voters are suppressed. And the police, white police, shooting unarmed or otherwise innocent black people, just murdering them on the streets of various cities all over the country, not just down south, but in New York and other places too. So from all the way from the beginning, it was slavery. And then once this flag, once the southern states seceded from the Union, they created the Confederate States of America. So they had their own country, the Confederates, the CSA. And so they needed a flag. Every country has a flag, right? And it's a symbol. Often the flag of a country is the symbol of what the country is formed from, the ideals, the beliefs, or just the hereditary lineage of what formed the country and who formed the country. In some countries, there's not mice. They don't put mice on flags, right? They usually have lions on flags or dragons. And in a lot of European countries, still to this day, although they may have changed some of this, what the flags had on them were royal coats of arms of the founding kings and ancestors of the country, right? The Romans had a certain battle flag. I don't know what it was. The Romans had a battle flag that they carried into battle. And a lot of European countries to this day have like German flags. They have dragons, and they have lions, and they have imperial beasts and griffins, and they have crowns on them, showing the lineage of the royalty, the royal line that founded this particular country. The United States flag. The United States flag, which has changed over time, depending on the original one with 13 stars for the 13 colonies. But then, all of these things mean something. They symbolize something. And this is what the Confederate flag symbolizes. And it's an insult. It's more than an insult. It's an outrageous slap in the face every single moment that there's a Confederate flag in. And what's happened recently, especially flying in a public place, on public ground where people pay taxes to maintain it, people pay taxes to maintain these things, blacks and whites down south. And it's not just on, this symbol doesn't just appear on the flags. It also appears on license plates. There are some states that, I don't know if it's official, but there are some states down south that the Confederate symbol or the Confederate flag appears in the corner of a license plate, or it may just be a vanity plate that thousands and thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people have on their license plates on their cars. There are decals. There are, as I say, mugs. There's all kinds of things. But this movement now, this tragedy, was just the last straw for a lot of people. And it seems as if finally, and this is the way sometimes things have to happen. In fact, this is often the way things have to happen. It's like hitting bottom for, you know, for an addict. For a culture, especially that's focused down south, but for a culture that's focused on this kind of insensitive, is not, doesn't even do it justice, this kind of insensitive, vicious, insulting memorabilia, this insistence on showing the world that that slavery and everything else is not dead. I mean, it's almost like a deliberate insult to a whole group or a particular group of people, and it's an insult, really, when you think about it, to all Americans and to all humanity. This kind of thing. All of these things have been sold at Walmart. You could walk into a Walmart store, I suppose, not up north, but down south, or sold online at Walmart, certainly sold online at eBay and on Amazon. You know, hundreds of thousands of products, maybe not different products, but you add them up, you know, hundreds of thousands, maybe $1 billion in sales of Confederate flag or Confederate symbol products sold on these websites and maybe sold in Walmart stores. I don't really know. I haven't been in a Walmart store for 10 years. The last time was up in Maine someplace, and they didn't have any Confederate symbols. But these things were sold up there, and now they took them off. At first, well, I think it was Amazon said that they weren't going to take them off. But there's so much pressure, and this tragedy has affected everybody, and it is sort of like the last straw. You know, first of all these police killings that have been in the news, all these murders of black kids and of black men by white cops, and it's enough already. It's enough. So finally, these huge stores are taking this stuff offline. These things have been taken offline. Theoretically speaking, according to what I read, you cannot go on Walmart or Amazon or eBay and buy this material anymore. And that's just fine in a way. In a way. You have to think about this in a certain other way. Let me talk about that later. But the Civil War, as I mentioned before, anybody who studied the Civil War knows that it wasn't just this flag doesn't just symbolize slavery. The Civil War wasn't just about slavery. It was basically the North. It was capitalism and industrialism up north, unfettered, completely out of control capitalism and industrialism, which is, you know, the hallmark basically of the United States of America, and especially where it was up north, versus a feudal society down south, which was the same as any kind of European feudal society in a way, based on, over there, it was based on serfs, later peasants, who had no rights and had no access to law whatsoever, and, you know, were worked to death sometimes on the land holdings, huge, vast land holdings of the quote-unquote nobility, or, you know, the people who ruled the country, a feudal society. So down south, they had that too. They had these landowners who had these vast plantations, and you know, the slaves worked on these, and they grew cotton, and the cotton was shipped to the North and made into, or and also shipped to England, by the way. So it was England was sort of like the European version of the industrial North, the industrialized North of the United States, because most of the cotton crop was shipped north to be turned into textiles and shipped to England to be turned into textiles. And so then a lot of the there were import duties and there were federal taxes that the government situated in Washington, located in Washington, the federal government, there was no income tax. But there were taxes that had to be paid, you know, that the services had to be paid for. It wasn't they were building roads. All of this stuff was built by the states. But there was a Navy. There was an Army. There was the White House. There were federal buildings. There was the Capitol building. There were, you know, things that had to be maintained in the federal government. And it was paid for by taxes, duties, import, export, that kind of thing, on various products. And so the North needed the taxes that the South paid on these things. Now, down South, they had slaves. Down South, they had slaves to do the work, the really hard work. Although, you know, there are a lot of extremely poor, horribly poor whites living down South, too. It wasn't all just, you know, people sitting on the porch sipping mint juleps and buying horses at auction, you know, something like from Tara or something from Gone with the Wind. They had the slaves. But there was this tremendous amount of hypocrisy involved. In the up North, they had the Irish. The Irish came over here forced because they were dying because of the way the British treated them in Ireland from the potato famine. And the way the British treated them, they basically was almost kind of like a mass murder by the British of the Irish. So the Irish came to the United States. And when they got here, they had absolutely nothing. They were as poor as anybody has ever been in this country, as poor as anybody has ever been in this country, and treated like shit by everybody that they encountered. There was a kind of a nativism. If you ever saw the movie Gangs of New York, it gives you a good graphic illustration of what the nativists, that is people who had been here for a few generations, who consider themselves, you know, real Native Americans, which of course is a big joke when you consider who the original Native Americans were. They got wiped out by these people. So these poor whites who lived in this country, who lived in some of the worst neighborhoods and the worst poverty-stricken neighborhoods in the country, and in this case, this movie is about New York City, they considered the Irish beneath them. It's something that always, something about human beings or about a lot of human beings, that it seems necessary for them to feel better, to have somebody in worse shape than they are. I think this happens in people's personal lives. You know, sometimes it's uncharitable and it's ungenerous, but a lot of people have this, you know, like, well, at least I'm not as bad off as somebody or else, you know, or you even see this in a kind of the horror of abusive relationships between parents and children. Parents who, as children, were abused, you know, physically abused or otherwise abused by their parents or by adults or by, you know, maybe in some place where they were located, where they were abused, like in an orphanage or something, or even brought up that way in their own house, not inevitably, but very often wind up abusing their own kids. So somebody has got to pay for the harm and the humiliation that was visited on people. So they push it off onto their own. They find somebody that's worse off than them. You know, as bad off as the Irish were in New York, they like to think of the blacks in New York who were, you know, as poor or poorer than they were, as worse than they were. And that's because it's all racism, too. The inevitable racism, the dark skin, which was justified by preachers and priests and all sorts of religious authorities. And it was commonly accepted back then that black people were just simply inferior, that God meant them to be slaves. This is how religious, you know, a lot of religious leaders preach this, and a lot of people believe this, especially down South, that they were inferior. But it was always a question of capitalism and industrialism versus the feudal South. And so there were very complicated and very complex reasons for the Civil War, why it started and why it broke out. But essentially, if you think of it in terms of capitalism and you think of it in terms of money, it's also the rich versus the poor. The North was richer than the South. They had a greater breadth and depth of riches and of money and of material wealth. And so it's always the rich versus the poor. And in the movie Gangs of New York, in fact, somebody was talking to some extremely rich person who lived on, at the time, Fifth Avenue, a mansion on Fifth Avenue, and he said, there were the draft riots of 1863, in which a lot of, and this is another example of the rich versus the poor. In 1863, a draft was instituted because there were so many men dying in the Union Army that Lincoln and his advisors decided to institute a draft, to draft soldiers. They didn't have enough volunteers from the northern states. And the draft was instituted, and you could buy your way out of the draft. You know, like George Bush somehow used his influence and power to buy his way out of the draft during Vietnam. No, he was drafted to buy his way out of actually serving in any kind of combat capacity. He used his power and his money. But in 1863, if you were drafted and you had, now I forget what the price was to buy yourself out of the draft. It may have been $600. I think it was $600, which now is something like $15,000 or $20,000. In other words, if you had a lot of money and or if you were rich, you didn't have to fight. But the poor, the Irish, all who got any of the Irish that got drafted, and they mostly the poorest in New York were the Irish, if they got drafted, there was no way they could buy their way out. And there was racism, too, in New York City, and this is the way society is, because a lot of blacks who were free blacks and had arrived in New York City or had escaped from down south or had just been, you know, just were free blacks from other states where there wasn't slavery, arrived in New York and were taking the jobs of the Irish. Well, that's the way the Irish saw it. And they were, you know, they would work for even less wages. As little as the Irish were getting paid, where they could barely afford to house themselves or to eat, the blacks were being paid less and accepting less money, and the Irish saw the blacks as taking their jobs. So there was racism, there was hatred of one half of the bottom of society from the other half, and as I was saying before, right before these riots broke out, where the Irish, seeing the injustice, the ridiculous, the absurd injustice of being able to buy your way out of the draft. Can you imagine that? That you had enough money, you can actually buy your way out of the draft and somebody else would have to fight for you in your place. They rioted. They just, they just rioted. They broke into newspaper offices. They broke into draft offices. They beat up cops. And they murdered and lynched and set fire to black people. They burned down a Negro. They burned down a black orphanage on 42nd Street, which is where now the 42nd Street Library is. It was once upon a time that land had a building on it that was located there that was an orphanage for black children. It was burned down by an Irish mob, and an Irish mob roamed through the city. The police couldn't contain them. Ultimately, I forget who it was, but ultimately it was some division of the Federal Army, of the Union Army, had to be sent to New York to put down this riot. The cops couldn't control them. And it was an extraordinary moment in history in the United States. And during at one point in this movie, at least, somebody said, aren't you worried about this fight coming uptown to engulf us, you know, the people who owned everything, the rich? And one of these men said with a smarmy smile on his face, you can always get one half of the poor to fight the other half of the poor. That's what it's all about for us. Yes, indeed. Think of Vietnam. Think of other wars where people, think of Vietnam especially. You can always get one half of the poor to fight the other half of the poor. We'll take our poorest who have no jobs, who have nothing to look forward to. We'll give them a gun, you know, they're angry, we'll give them three meals a day, we'll give them some minimal amount of respect. Maybe we'll offer to train them in some trade or something like that. And then we'll send them off and they'll fight whoever it is that we decide that we want to fight. So the war between the states was a complicated war. But this battle flag represented, and the other thing was states' rights. The other thing was states' rights. And that's complicated. That's complicated. Look at the federal government now. The federal government, especially since World War II, where it speeded up mightily, has become the kind of thing which is like a giant monster engulfing everything. The federal government seems to have absolutely no respect whatsoever for the individual rights of American citizens. And so there is something behind this idea, not necessarily just of states' rights, but of the rights of average citizens. The government has the central government, and this was always the great fear of some of the founders of this country. The central government has become too powerful. And this is something that the people down south were always leery of, even way back then. They wanted to maintain their rights. But still, in the end, one of those rights was to keep slaves, to have slaves. And it finally seems to have dawned on people that this flag is a symbol, which is a very deep representation of all of slavery, of lynching, of segregation, of poverty, of prison, of and up to this minute of suppression of voting rights, of cops killing blacks, of racism. And finally, it's got to come down. And there's an indication that this flag will be lowered and will be moved. And the governor of South Carolina, Nikki Haley, has said that the flag needs to be lowered and moved. It's time to ditch this flag, and a lot of people are getting on this bandwagon. And then you have to think, all these people talk about, well, then what did all these people die for? What did all these Southerners die for? Did they die in vain? Well, one thing they died for, maybe they were just ignorant, a lot of these men, they died to preserve slavery. That's just not right, and this flag is the enduring symbol of it. Catchy tune, right? A catchy tune. I always liked Dixie till I understood what it meant, and I still like it. A tune is a tune. Flag is a flag. A flag can be absolutely beautiful. If you didn't know what it meant, the swastika is a powerful symbol, right? And there are people who are complaining all over the South now, people who identify themselves as, and you know, some of them unfortunately look exactly the way you can imagine them, you know, guys with tattoos and long beards and, you know, like Confederate tattoos on them. A lot of people who are in business selling these things, people who supply, there are, like I said, there are, I don't know about a billion, but there's hundreds of millions of dollars worth of products being sold, manufactured and sold online that have been taken offline, that are not going to be sold in major chain stores anymore or not going to be. And a lot of people are upset about this. They still feel oppressed by the federal government. And this is, but this is the kind of thing that a culture has to change. And sometimes, very often, almost, I'd say the majority of times, that something really tragic and horrible like this has to happen, where these innocent people are murdered. And then there's the inevitable, like, oh, it's the sole gunman. He's just a lunatic. No, that doesn't work anymore. That doesn't work anymore. Even if he's completely out of his mind, which he obviously is, it doesn't matter. He's standing there and on his Facebook page or blog or whatever the hell it is, with his Confederate flag, and he's allied with various groups like this. So now things have to change. Things have to change, and they are changing. But still, you know, even when I was growing up in the 50s, I remember when I went, and I mean, New York City was segregated, basically, even though the schools weren't segregated. The races were segregated. People lived in different neighborhoods. There was no mixing of neighborhoods ever. And sometimes we still have this, you know, where gentrification of neighborhoods like up in Harlem and places, which are, you know, have been black bastions and black neighborhoods for a long time. And, you know, they're turning white and blacks have to move out because the rents are being raised, so they can't afford it. So this enduring poverty is still a leftover from the racism that is inherent in the United States. The two great crimes of the United States, the genocide and the mass murder and destruction of the culture of the American Indian, Native Americans, and slavery. These two things are still at the root. They have not actually been exorcised. They are still at the root of so much that is wrong with this country. I mean, when I was growing up in the 50s, my neighborhood was white, and the neighborhood over across a major boulevard was black, and never the twain met. That was it. If somebody black was walking in our neighborhood, it was scary to everybody, and it was enough for people to call the cops sometimes just to see somebody black walking in our neighborhood. If somebody white was walking in a black neighborhood, nobody was calling the cops because the cops were all white. But the hostility was overwhelming. You wouldn't want to be walking in. And in the high school I went to, Andrew Jackson High School in Queens, Andrew Jackson High School, there were 6,000 kids in my high school. They had three different shifts. There were so many people. This is something we're talking about in the late 50s and the early 60s. And in the school was situated in a neighborhood that was kind of white on one side and black on the other side. And you didn't, if you were white, go out the black side of the school. You didn't go out the black exit because you were liable to get beat up. And if you were black, you did not go out the white exit on the other side because you were liable to get beat up because you were black. And that's the way it was. And this is, I'm talking about when I was 15, 16, 17 years old. And this was, you know, the inherited, evil, one of the great inherited evils, which has not gone away, obviously. The other thing was, I remember when I was growing up, I went down south. My father, in 1954, I was 9 years old, he took me down to Memphis where he was working. He was working as an engineer on some project down outside the suburbs of Memphis. And he took me down there. And one time we went on a bus. We went on a local bus, took a trip on a bus. And I was walking. I was on a bus. I'd worked, you know, been on buses up north a million times. So I get on a bus and I'm walking, and like a lot of little kids, you notice that kids, when they get on the bus, they like to go to the back, or even bigger kids. They like, somehow there's something about going to the back of the bus that kids like to do. I don't know what that's all about. It's interesting. So anyhow, I walk straight to the back like I'm used to doing, like I like to do. And all of a sudden, I feel somebody jerk me off my feet and pull me up in the air and grab me and bring me back to the front of the bus. And I looked down, and there was this line. There was a line that I had crossed, literally an actual line. And my father said, well, I said, what are you doing? What's going on? What's going on? I was scared to death. And he says, you can't go to the back of the bus. You're not allowed to sit in the back of the bus. This is in Memphis. And I said, well, why? And he said, why don't you just be quiet and I'll explain it later. So, you know, Dixieland, right? Maybe they should have a referendum, but they've had referendums down there. In other words, if each state down south, South Carolina, by the way, Mississippi, I'm just remembering something. The state of Mississippi actually has on its flag, the state flag of Mississippi has a Confederate area, has a Confederate flag area on its actual flag. That's got to change. These things have to change. And people say, well, it's just a flag, or it's just a cloth, or it's just a license plate, or it's just a mug. Well, what if in Germany people said, well, it's just, you know, the swastika, well, big deal. So we have swastika mugs and swastika flags and swastika license plates. What's the big deal? Well, no need to comment on that, right? What about a referendum, right? They've had referendums down there. And because of voting suppression and because of various complicated reasons, like who votes and what they vote for, the referendums came out something like 60% favored having the flag, the Confederate flag, fly in South Carolina. And, you know, that's, after all, I mean, you know, you say majority rules, but the majority once favored or tolerated slavery and child labor and no votes for women and, you know, 7-day work week and everything else. And some of the people who are objecting say, it's our heritage. You know, you're talking about our heritage. After all, hundreds of thousands of brave boys and men died fighting for the Confederacy, for states' rights, for the right to fill in the blank, right? One of them was slavery, though. And people are imperfectly educated, put it that way. They're imperfectly educated. There's just a lack of sensitivity. There are reasons why it's right to fight the federal government. I don't mean literally fight. I mean, that would be suicide, right, at this point. But there are reasons why it's right. And a lot of us up north have been doing this all the time. I hear on Progressive Radio Network or any kind of progressive movement or liberal movement that a lot of us were involved in and still are involved in one way or another. You fight the federal government. Look at the NSA spying on American citizens. Look at all the oppressive rules laid down by federal agencies. The federal government doesn't even belong to us anymore. It's the province of the rich. It is owned by other people, and it is used to oppress us all the time. One thing that occurred to me, too, though, is like outlawing all this stuff. Isn't it like outlawing hate speech? If somebody wants to be an asshole and put a Confederate license plate, a vanity plate, on their car, well, can you really outlaw that? It's like outlawing hate speech. I was never a big fan of outlawing hate speech to throw somebody out of a school or, you know, or and otherwise punish somebody for being a jerk, for being an insensitive moron, for being an asshole, just because they want to insult somebody or use a word. Like faggot or nigger or kike or whatever they want to use. I mean, is it right to do that? I mean, there's questions of free speech. And I guess maybe people should have, just throwing these things out. Do people have a right to be offensive? If people want to wear a Confederate T-shirt or have a mug that has a Confederate flag on it. But the one thing you don't do is you don't let people fly it in a public place. In other words, nothing that involves the government, and maybe that includes a license plate, nothing that involves the government, the state government or the federal government, should have anything to do with this representation, with this symbol of the Confederate flag. It should have nothing to do with it. What about, how much time do I have left, by the way? Five? Is there an argument to be made for that? I mean, would you endorse such an argument, or could you consider such an argument that outlawing all these symbols, like for instance, not selling Confederate merchandise or Confederate flag merchandise online, you know, the symbol of slavery and the symbol of racial hatred. Not selling that online is interfering with people's First Amendment rights. I mean, inevitably, there will be lawsuits involved in this. I mean, another way of looking at it is it's a complicated world, right? There are probably going to be, I don't know, it could be just, it could be a lot of Chinese workers. I mean, who makes all this stuff anyhow? There's no doubt in my mind that a Confederate flag, decorated mug or Confederate flag T-shirts, Confederate flag decals, probably they're made in China, you know, which is beyond comprehension, right? When you think about it, it boggles the mind in about 20 different levels. But still, there are probably American workers. There are probably thousands of American workers one way or another, or people who have stores or have businesses who have employees who have made a living, who now suddenly will not make a living unless they do it in some sort of clandestine way. I mean, actually, the sales of these places, of these stores, went up soaring through the roof when they took these things offline. It's like prohibition or something, right? You can't buy this in a national, you can't buy this in the regular way anymore. So people are going to make this underground now. You know, people are going to make this underground, and people will do it that way. But cultural change has to happen. Even if it takes 150 years, cultural change happens. I mean, look at gay marriage. Who would have ever dreamed of this? It's like fantasy and science fiction. The idea of even being gay in public, you know, way into the 60s and 70s and 80s. And then finally, yes, okay, to be gay. But then gays in the military, then gays here, gays teacher, gay this. Gay marriage? Now, you know that millions and millions and millions of Americans, Islamic, Jewish, various Christian denominations, abhor all this stuff. They find themselves disgusted by this idea of gay marriage. And people who may even otherwise be perfectly decent people. I have some friends who are extremely religious, of one who's Muslim, one who's Jewish, and one who's Christian. They are, in fact, the three nicest, most decent, good-hearted, even in some ways liberal people I know. Would never harm another living soul. And they may feel sad for gay people, but they consider this to be against not only the law of nature, but against God's law. So, the point is there are millions of people. These things change, and they take a long time to change. But this, what about a museum? Let's just build a museum. Take all this Confederate crap out of the public eye, and certainly off public land, and build a museum in Mississippi or Alabama or South Carolina, probably Mississippi or Alabama. And get private people to donate to build a museum, and it could be the Plantation Museum, or call it the Slavery Museum, or call it the Confederate Museum. And it could be a plantation. And you could go there, and you could have a paid trip with the family, and you could stay at one of the several hotels on the grounds of the Confederate Museum. And you can involve yourself in the various amusements, pay extra for it. You can buy and sell slaves. You can go to a slave auction. Won't that be fun? Like a reenactment, you know? How about that for people who are upset about losing this this symbol? But in the end, this Confederate flag is going, and it's about time that it went. It's a symbol of racism, a symbol of some of the greatest evil in our country. And it's got to go, and it's on its way out, and that can only be good.